Okay, we are here on January 20th. We are here with...
My name is AJ Ziegler.
All right. And, okay, so I have a couple of opening questions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So how do you identify and what are your pronouns?
I identify as a trans man. My pronouns are he, they, and I also identify as a drag artist.
What is your occupation, or what do you do to earn a living?
I'm currently working in retail.
When did you discover that you were part of the LGBTQ plus
community? I felt something for a very long time, for most of my childhood, and it wasn't something that I could quite identify with, I would say that it was around the age of 12 that I really found the language to identify what I was experiencing.
Have you always lived in Louisiana?
Yes, I have. I've lived here in Lafayette, and I've also lived in New Orleans.
Describe your upbringing to me.
Very isolating, very lonely. Being a trans individual growing up, I didn't quite feel that I had a place within hanging out with girls, and I didn't feel like I really fit in hanging out with guys. So it made it very difficult for me to have friends or be accepted by other people. So, very lonely.
How do you think being LGBTQ plus has affected your development as a person?
Entirely. I would say before I was able to have any sense of label, it was still affecting my life. I would say though, after I found a label or labels and I found, I came to terms with my identity, I began expressing myself and dealing with a lot of criticism towards my self-expression. So from the beginning, it affected pretty much every aspect of my life, and still very much does.
Could you describe some major events in your childhood that have shaped your worldview?
Yes. Not positive experiences. I think as far as my identity goes, when I was in middle school, there was one event that really kind of shaped my worldview. And that was when I was in a classroom, and by this point, I had been expressing myself, and I was very visibly queer, but I wasn't necessarily out. However, it was kind of just something that everyone knew. And there were a group of guys who were sitting next to me and started getting into dialogue about a lot of transphobic and homophobic dialogue. And it got to the point where they were insinuating the praise of murdering queer people. And I remember that was the first time, because I dealt with the bullying and stuff, but that was the first time that I really heard the violent side of it and being very direct, because it very much felt like they were, the way that they had positioned themselves and sat and did it right next to me, it very much felt like they were talking at me. And that was a really scary moment, and that kind of, as far as my identity goes, that kind of created a sense of fear. And that was one of the first times that I'd really experienced that. and it really stuck with me for a long time, and still does.
Describe your relationship with your family during this period, if you're comfortable doing so.
My mom was the first person. Okay, that's not true. I was going to say my mom was the first person I came out to, but oddly enough, it was my aunt who I came out to first. And it was really interesting because we went on a walk together, and we were talking, and I don't remember exactly how it got brought up, but the topic of being queer got brought up. And I think it was because of the way that I was dressing. It was very, I think it was very targeted that she was trying to have that conversation. I don't think I probably understood that at the time. I was about 12 at this period. And by that point, I had kind of come out to myself, but I wasn't out to anyone else. And she started talking about, you know, I was upset with what she was saying about queer people. So I came out in that moment, and it was just kind of like it was just like I was so fed up with that. I was like, that's me, you know, like that, like who you're talking about is me. And she started talking about how, you know, like I was gonna go to hell, and she started actually like praying over me in that moment. Which was just like that, my first time like coming out, you know, that's the reaction I'm getting. So I just started, like, she kept praying, and I kept trying to, like, I was trying to stay strong and try to hold it together, but she just kept going, and I broke down. Like, I just started crying and like just sobbing like uncontrollably, and then she just continued with it. And when we made it back, because I think it was for a holiday event, it was, and when we made it back inside, we were like with everyone. And I was really scared because I was like, oh no, is she going to tell everyone, you know, like what's going to happen? Like, did I do, like, because I just like outed myself on impulse, you know, and I didn't know what the response to that would be. And we were like sitting at like a dinner table with everyone, and I'm like having this intense emotional reaction. And she starts sending me links to how, like on my phone, like to how you can change and, you know, like how you can overcome, you know, being queer and everything like that. So I'm like having this event where I'm having this like really traumatic experience. I'm having to just like hold it together, you know, because I can't talk to anyone about it or else I'm outing myself, you know. The next person I came out to in my family was my mother. It was a terrifying experience, but I think that she actually handled it very well. And at first I came out to her as pansexual, so it wasn't so much, you know, the question of my gender at the moment, but it was, you know, it was kind of like, for me, it was like the first step to there's more to it. And then I eventually told her that, you know, I wasn't ready to come out, but there would probably be a period in my life in the future where I wanted to transition. My father did not handle it very well when I came out to him. And I originally just came out to him as pansexual. I mean, there were always questions, though, about my identity because of the way that I presented myself, the ways that I dressed, the way that I kept my hair, you know, like all these little things. So there were always kind of questions, but it was kind of something that was like we just didn't talk about. And when the topic of me being queer was brought up, it was not. My father wanted me to keep it a secret or keep it to myself, which made it really hard to come out because there was like a level of like, I see it, I understand it, but you can't tell anyone, you know? And I remember he told me, he's like, you don't want to be queer because being queer means that you're going to have a really hard life. And I remember in the moment being like, you know, you're one of the people making it hard for me. When I came out as trans with him, which I'll talk more about that, but when I came out as trans with him later in life, I didn't come out to him until I was 16. And that's when our relationship, he did not have a good reaction to it, and he became abusive in many ways, screaming at me, throwing things at me, and it would all be, you know, revolving around my identity, you know. My stepdad, he was just very quiet at first. He kind of retreated. He didn't really feel comfortable with it. From what I heard, my sister would tell me that he would make homophobic, transphobic remarks about me behind my back. So it became, I think that was his way of dealing with it, was joking about my identity because he couldn't accept it. My sister, though, as far as my family, my sister was very accepting, and that was probably, she was one of the people that I was able to confide in. But even in the beginning of my transition, when I told her, when I was around like 12, 13, when I told her I was going to transition, she had a hard time processing that. It was really difficult. I think everybody had this moment of grieving who they assumed I was and who they assumed I would grow up to be. So that's how it was actually described to me, was especially by my father. Like, he told me he was in a period of grieving. So that's all for my family.
Tell me about some difficulties or hardships that you face as a transgender man.
Quite a lot. I think that some of the hardest stuff I dealt with, or the stuff that really stuck out to me, was when I was in the beginning of my transition. So around me, it just like 12 to 17. Before I was on testosterone, I was referred to quite commonly as with the D slur. That became a very like common occurrence because they were seeing me as I was being perceived as a masculine woman. So it was kind of complex because I was dealing with that. So that was more what I dealt with like in public. Was that terminology, but which was interesting though, because like sometimes like I would have I used to go on walks around the neighborhood, so I'd be walking around and sometimes like cars would like drive by and like, you know, yell out like the F slur, the D slur, the T slur, you know. So those were, yeah. I don't know if this is the right way to say, but I got very comfortable very young with harassment. Like, it just became like a, you know, like, this is just how people refer to me because of the way that I'm expressing myself. I think hardships as well. I dealt with a lot of pushback from many religious people, and a lot of them would, you know, it became a thing that people would tell me, like, you know, you're going to hell, you know? So that greatly, that was a big hardship that I faced as well, that greatly impacted me.
What role has religion played in your life?
It's hard to answer that because my first instinct is to think about all the negatives. Because I would say that most of the homophobia and transphobia that I faced was directed at me with a religious undertone. Especially in my earlier years, because I didn't mention this, but I was at a Catholic school for elementary and middle school. So, it was seen as, like, being in that school, it was seen as, like, a taboo topic. Like, it wasn't even so much that it was, like, you know, we hate people like you. You know, but it was, like, you know, it's so bad that you don't even talk about it. You know, like, that would get shut down. The only times it was talked about was in a negative sense, you know. And even then, you know, they felt that it was too inappropriate of a topic. My family was religious when I was a child, and they also, they didn't talk about it with me. Like, that's how it was referred to. It's like, you know, you don't talk about this experience. You don't talk about this. However, there have been religious people in my life who were also some of the most gracious people at this time. One of the first people, it was a friend of my dad's, worked for the Catholic diocese, and they were one of the first people to really, like, kind of sit down with me and tell me, like, it's okay, you know, like, you're valid, like, you're gonna be okay. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I don't want to entirely say that religion has had a negative impact, you know, but the majority of my experience, at least around here, with religion has been used in a hateful sense towards me. Or not just hateful, but also ostracizing. A lot of my family can't seem to connect with me. This is something too. As far as religion goes, one year, the same aunt, so she was one of the only people in my family who knew I was queer. Although everyone kind of had suspicions about it, like, it was kind of, she wrote me a letter for my Christmas gift, and it was essentially talking about, you know, I mean, it was the same kind of stuff, like, you can change, you can be healed, you can be fixed, you know. And she included, like, Bible scripture and all of that. So I would say overall my experiences with religion have not been very positive. I resented religion for a very long time, organized religion. I resented the idea of a God. I resented the idea of all of it because I felt so ostracized from the religious community.
How would you describe the current environment for transgender individuals?
I want to say it's better than it's ever been. And in many ways, I'm very happy that I can live in this period where, while it was not easy, I still, like, I personally have access to testosterone. I have access to, I had access to getting top surgery. And I had access to, you know, having my name legally changed and everything. And I also have my gender marker on my license changed. So there's a lot that I'm thankful for. But obviously, I'm still not content with where we're at. I still feel very ostracized. I still deal with uncomfortable encounters daily, you know. And on a larger scale, I always have a deep fear of my rights being stripped away from me. And I also still fear very heavily, like, violence. The harassment I can deal with, but the violence scares me. And that's something that, you know, not just something that I deal with, but I've also have friends who are also trans, and we're kind of all in the same space with it, where, you know, it's really scary. And, you know, you always hear, like, I feel like the only times that I really get to hear about trans media or trans individuals in media is when there's violence enacted on us.
What changes do you think need to be made to make the country a safer, more inclusive place for trans folks?
We need laws that actually indefinitely protect us. I think that is extremely important. I also feel that we need more and better access to healthcare and information. I think that those would be steps in creating a safer environment. I think we also need more representation, more positive representation in media. Because I think that would help other individuals who don't struggle with, you know, being a trans individual, having just more knowledge on our experiences, having more knowledge on how we identify, even because it can even be as, I mean, that's my answer for now.
How do you feel that being a trans man has affected your politics?
Entirely. I don't feel like I have the ability to just, like, look at stuff and just be like, oh, like, this sounds good, this doesn't sound good. You know, like, when I'm, like, doing research on like, who I'm going to vote for, like, what's happening, I'm constantly concerned of, like, are my rights being taken into consideration? Are my friends' rights being taken into consideration? Are the other just members of my community, like, are our rights being taken into consideration? And not only that, but I mean, it also affects my politics with women's healthcare as well, and how that's taken seriously. Because I do still have a uterus, you know, like, I still have periods, depending on where I'm at with my hormones. Sometimes I have them, sometimes I don't. I can go periods without having a period. So all of that is taken into consideration when it comes to my political beliefs.
You mentioned that you identify as pansexual as well.
I do.
Do you think, as a pansexual person, do you feel viewed differently than the rest of the LGBTQ?
I do. I think it's, I think in my experience, like, when, like, for me, I understand it because it's my identity, but I find that other people have a hard time understanding that, and especially, like, when I first came out as trans, there was this, like, hyper-masculine persona that got pushed onto me in the beginning. And it was everybody being like, oh, well, you like girls because you're a guy, you know? So then I was already dealing with, you know, like, these heterosexual, like, these cishet norms being pushed on me when that wasn't something that I could meet, you know? And then there's people who, I've come out to people as pansexual, and they were like, wait, I thought you were trans, you know? And so it's kind of like, I'm both, you know? I feel like pansexuality is not something that's talked about enough within the community, and it doesn't deserve, I mean, it doesn't get as much recognition as it deserves as an identity. But I also feel like people, a lot of the time, are more concerned with my gender identity than my sexuality. And I feel like both are big aspects of my queer identity.
What's your perception of the LGBTQ plus community in Lafayette today?
I've had good experiences. I've had bad experiences. I think I primarily feel still ostracized quite often being transgender. I don't feel like I'm even very accepted into the community, and even when I am, I find that there's a lot of questions that come up about my identity, and I have this issue where, I don't know, like I just don't feel connected, and I don't feel like there are many places where I can go and express myself or you know, find my sense of community, so I still feel very lonely when it comes to my community. Which is sad because I know we're here, I just don't know where we are, you know? I have a hard time engaging with my community.
Talking about this difficulty with engagement and this loneliness that you feel, do you think that's connected to a larger inter-community struggle that we're facing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think primarily, especially here, when you think of, and I think it's still because Lafayette has a more conservative culture to it. So when people are even talking about, in my experience, when people are even talking about the LGBTQ plus community, oftentimes, they're really only referring to lesbians and gay men, cis gay men. So I feel very, very left out.
To build on that, do you think there's a lack of support within the LGBTQ plus community in regards to race and class?
Yes, absolutely. Again, a lot of the people, at least around here, a lot of the people who are getting the recognition, primarily, in my experience, it's white cis gay men, and I feel like everybody else just kind of gets thrown to the side. And doesn't probably, there's no voices, you know, that are being shared.
What can you share about your experience with queer spaces in Lafayette?
So I lived in, when I first came out, because I started my transition here in Lafayette when I was 17, my medical transition. I had top surgery when I was 18, but that was in New Orleans. I'm sorry, could you read the question one more time? I want to make sure I have it.
Of course. What can you share about your experience with queer spaces in Lafayette?
Okay. So I feel like I did not have any queer spaces when I was like growing up here, and especially at the beginning of my transition. I really, like again, I was really dependent on the friends that I had within the community. you know, so it's just like we would hang out, we were together, but we really didn't even go out much because we didn't even feel like there were any spaces where we could just go express ourselves, you know, go be open, go celebrate our identity, be a part of the community. So I never felt like I had those spaces. I moved to New Orleans and I kind of experienced a similar thing, which is interesting. Because I really had this hope that I would move to New Orleans and, you know, everything would be sunshine and rainbows and it would be perfect. And then I moved back here and I started going to Bolt, which is the only gay bar here that I know of. And it's been kind of a lot of ups and downs. There have been periods where I feel really accepted and I'm really glad, but then there are periods where I still feel ostracized, you know, and I don't feel like it's the proper place. And while a bar is like a wonderful thing and a wonderful space, and I'm still very thankful that we have that, I feel like, you know, there's no just like nice, calm place to be able to connect with my community. So I feel very much a lack of safe queer spaces here.
What was the process of coming out like for you?
Very difficult, very difficult. I remember like in the beginning of it, like it was so, like I couldn't, like I remember there was this heaviness on my chest when I would think about it, or when I would have that feeling like of I'm about to come out to somebody, like, you know, my palms are sweating, like I'm stressing so much that I'm giving myself a headache, you know, like it made me feel physically sick, you know, to be able to express myself because I was so afraid of the reactions. I had very supportive friends. With my family, I came out to them, it was kind of like, I distanced myself a lot from my family during that period. Because even the support that I was getting, it was so difficult for me to even accept the support that was being given to me. And I was always afraid that, you know, I was so afraid of letting everyone down and being a disappointment, you know, because I knew that's not what they wanted from me. It was really difficult coming out at school. Primarily, people just had a lot of questions for me. And especially since, came out just like officially came out as trans, like, sophomore year of high school. It was kind of this big deal, you know, because it's just like, here I am telling everyone, you know. So, just a very overall daunting experience. And, I don't know, it was a lot. It was a lot for sure.
Would you say that you've noticed a difference in the attitudes of others towards LGBTQ plus women versus LGBTQ plus men?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like I've kind of experienced both sides of it in a way. Because before I had started my medical transition, a lot of people, since I was dressing masculine and everything, and in high school I had a girlfriend at one period, that was like right before I had officially come out to everyone, so I was assumed to be a lesbian at the period, or that was the identity that was put onto me, although I never claimed it for myself. I dealt with a lot of men fetishizing that. So I dealt with being very fetishized as being perceived as a gay woman. And then after I transitioned, or I came out, that was a little bit of a different situation. I still dealt with a lot of being fetishized and a lot of being objectified. But I'd say there was a small period of time when I was in New Orleans where I had been on hormones, I'd had top surgery, and I was passing at that period of time. And I didn't like tell anyone, you know, for the most part, I didn't tell anyone that I was trans. I was just perceived as a gay man, which is also an interesting thing because I've never really been perceived as straight, you know, or being perceived as, like, I was always being perceived as some form of queer, you know. And I remember, like, thinking, like, I'm being treated so differently, you know, like, even the attitudes people had towards me. And it was interesting because in high school, when I was perceived to be a masculine woman, people thought, you know, I needed to keep up that, like, I have to be super masculine. And then when I had come out and I was living as just a gay man, I was thought I was like, you know, like I needed to be extra flamboyant, you know, like I needed to be kind of like that was what people wanted from me. So I never felt like I was just getting to, like during that period, like I never felt like I was really getting to just be myself. Like I felt like I was having all these stereotypes thrown on me and I was, you know, kind of being made to fulfill them for people or else, you know, like they didn't know how to treat me. They didn't know what category to put me in. So I would say I think it was more of a threat of violence when I was being perceived as a gay man, rather than a gay woman. I think that's all I'm going to say on that for now.
Do you think representation in media is important for an LGBTQ plus person?
Absolutely. I remember when I was a child, and especially since I just was able to identify with being queer, whether I had the language or not at the time, I was able to identify with that so early. I was always so upset with the lack of representation. I would go out of my way to try to find the representation, you know. And especially being a trans man, especially being like a very queer trans man, you know. I never, and I still struggle with this, I never felt like I had any real form of representation, you know. Nobody that I could look at and be like, oh, like, that's me, you know, like, I see that, like, I identify with that. I think it would have been completely different if I would have had that representation growing up. I think it would even be different now if I had that representation now, you know? I feel like I'm kind of going through this and experiencing everything, and I don't have anything to reference it to, you know? I don't have anything to help me identify how I'm feeling. So I personally think representation is immensely important. And I think it would also not only help me, but also help other people who are not a part of the trans community be able to recognize some of our experiences. And that may stop some of the ignorant questions that we hear over and over and over again, you know.
How do you feel the media engages with our community, both positively and negatively?
I rarely see positive trans media. Rarely. The only times that I do see trans media on, like, is, again, it's when they're talking about the violence that has been enacted on our community, or, you know, when they're trying to slander us, or when they're trying to talk about, you know, the rights that we're losing, or the controversy of our existence.
Talking about this negative coverage of not only the LGBTQ plus community as a collective, but specifically as, you know, directed towards trans folks, how do you think that this negative coverage affects the way that the trans community views itself?
It's hard for us to have a sense of pride, and that's such a big part of the goal of you know, being LGBTQ plus, is to be able to have a sense of pride. And it's like, how are we supposed to feel that, you know? That's something that I struggle with. You know, there's always, it's still kind of pushed on us, you know? I mean, I get asked often, like, do you wish you were born cis, you know? And, well, I would like to have a sense of pride in my identity. I still struggle with that. And that's really something that I hope to get to. But I really think it this lack of representation and this lack of positive media, it's hard for us to see ourselves in a positive light, you know? Because it's like, does anyone else see us that way, you know? And it can just be emotionally and mentally draining to never have that positivity being shared. You kind of have to go out of your way to find it. And I mean that on, like, all aspects. Like, not just media, but even just day-to-day life, you know? And I'm lucky enough that I have friends who are also trans, and we're able to be there for each other. But it is not by any means easy. It's hard. And a lot of the time, I mean, you'll get, you know, calls from your friend in the middle of the night being like, I don't, like, this is just too hard. Like, how do I keep going? You know? Like, I'm struggling.
Again, I want to thank you for doing this interview. And if there's any questions that I ask, of course, that you are not comfortable with, please let me know. How do you feel about the recent political action taken against LGBTQ plus people in Louisiana? So book bans, legislation, or sports bans, etc.
It's hard. It's really hard to see all of that, to hear all of that. And it's not just you can't just turn your phone on and turn your phone off and, like, pretend it's not happening, you know? It's like this, like, weight, this, like, immense weight that just sticks on you, you know? Where it's like, you just want to be considered like a normal person. You just want to be seen like everybody else, you know? And then when your community is being used as a controversial point, you know, like, do we deserve rights, you know? It's exhausting to see that constantly, like, over and over again, and then to have like these politicians literally sitting there fighting against your rights when, like, you're just like to them, they don't think about us as people, So it's very, like, witnessing all of this, and this happening during my lifetime, is very, it feels very dehumanizing, you know? Like, I feel more like a controversial topic point than an actual person, you know? And it can be really hard for me personally when I really, when a lot of, when, you know, like, every time I hear something, like, it just, like, it just, I get this, like, knot in my stomach, you know? Like, it's, and then it's not only, it's like, you know, like, it's not only how am I feeling, it's like, how are my friends feeling? How is the rest of my community feeling? And it's like, and then it's also like, you want to be there for everyone, but like, there's no sense of community. There's no place for us to, you know, knowingly gather with each other. So we're all kind of mourning, you know, and we're all kind of like grieving this, this like, the idea of like, a positive future, if that makes sense. Like, it, in that moment, it feels like there's no hope, you know? And it's, we can't just, there's no spaces where, at least in my experience, where we can just come together and support each other. So it's also a feeling of like, am I doing enough? What can I do? You know, and it's also like, why aren't other people standing up for me? You know, why aren't other people being there? You know, why do I feel so alone? And I think especially, like, I keep coming back to that, so I think that's a really big point for me, is that it feels very lonely being trans. And if I'm feeling that way, I can only imagine that there are a lot of other people in the community who also feel that way. I will add one more thing, and this is a little personal, but when I started really hearing about the legislation and everything, I had issues. It got to me so much that I was suffering from like suicidal ideation because I felt so unwanted, you know, on a larger scale of community, not just, you know, my queer community, but just, I didn't feel like I had a place. I felt like I was being, you know, pushed. So I mean, like, during a, there was a long period where I didn't want to get out of bed, I didn't want to function, you know, and then I feel like I already have this, like, stigma on me of being, like, a useless member of society, and then I really feel like I'm not able to function, you know, and then it feels like it's only kind of, it's kind of giving them what they want, you know, they want us to just disappear, and it's hard when you feel like nobody wants you.
This next question asks, how do you think we got to this point? Which is not to suggest that this type of controversy and adversity has not always been here, but in this new way.
I don't know how we got here. And it's interesting, because I kind of mentioned this earlier. I still feel like, as a trans person, this is the best it's ever been, you know? So for me, I'm not even thinking, how did we get this way? It's been this way, you know? I still feel like our rights and our life and our stories have never been properly heard or recognized. So it's kind of, it's more of a question for me of, like, how are we still here, you know? Why haven't we progressed past this point? What's holding everyone back from seeing us as people?
What do you think that LGBTQ plus folks can do to combat this?
We're fighting. We are. I see it. I think we really, as a community, have to come together, and we've got to stand up for each other. You know, we've got to be there for each other. It's not even just about standing up for each other, but it's about, we need to, while we're not necessarily wanted to create spaces, we need to make spaces where we have the ability to come together and support each other. I think that that's very important. And I think if we can really celebrate all aspects of ourselves, I think it's about if we can get to a point of really celebrating ourselves, you know, and celebrating our dignities. You know, because that's something they, like the pride, like if we can have a sense of pride, that's not something they can take away from us. They can take away our rights, but they can't take away our sense of self. So having spaces where we're able to have a sense of self and have the support that it takes to get there, I think that's what we can do.
You mentioned pride, which brings up the question for me. Do you attend any pride festivities?
I do. I do. Anytime I hear about an event, I try to make it a point to go. I think pride is very important to me. Pride celebrations are very important to me. And I think they're really important for our community to attend. However, I will say that every time I go to a pride celebration, there's always the fear of being in danger, you know? Because it's like you never know how other people are going to react to that. You never know. You know, I mean, there's already violence that happens against us, you know, when we're on our own, so when we're all together, scary, but it's also beautiful because we're all together, you know? So it makes us stronger. I think pride celebrations are extremely, extremely important.
Talking about pride and then these forms of positive expression, I think earlier you mentioned that you're a drag artist.
Yeah.
How do you feel that relates to pride?
The last pride celebration I went to, I was in drag. I think drag is such an authentic form of queer art. And it's so important, and it's so expressive, you know. And my experiences with it, and in the community, it tells a story. It's very emotional, you know. I mean, if people can't connect alone to just the words, it really brings out the art of it. It's very emotional. I feel like it's something that people can understand. I think it's very important for it to be a part of Pride celebrations because, again, it's just it's queer art. It's authentic queer art.
Can you discuss your experience in performing drag art?
Yes. I deal with a lot of harassment when I'm in drag. A lot of harassment. I actually haven't like really gone out in drag recently because the last time I did it was a very bad experience. I couldn't handle it. When you're in drag, like people don't always necessarily understand it as the art form that it is. And so I feel very dehumanized sometimes by the way that I'm treated when I'm in drag.
A lot of folks have expressed the sentiment that drag brings both the LGBTQ+ community and the local community together. Do you think this is true?
I think so. Again, I think it goes back to it's an art that we can celebrate. However, I still find that the community of Lafayette doesn't necessarily always understand it as the art that it is. And I find that sometimes it gets considered as this whole separate thing, you know? And the essence of it just being, like, again, like, authentic queer art, like, I feel like sometimes that gets lost, and I feel like it's not wanted to be seen that way, you know? But I do think, again, it goes back to, like, people can understand art. People see that, and it has emotion to it, you know? I do think it brings the community together, but I still feel like a larger community aspect is that it's still not fully respected as much as it deserves to be.
To switch tone here for a moment, what do you think is the best part of being LGBTQ plus?
The community, the people. It's a very beautiful community, and the spaces that I have found, which are not primarily just like places that I can go to, but more like friends' houses, events, you know, little things like that, they get thrown. It's that moment of just like when you're really able to be there and be with other people who understand a little bit of what you've been through. It's nice, and there's a vulnerability level to it too. I don't find many other places. Like even when we're all struggling, you know, when we're all struggling together, there's something beautiful about that. And that is beautiful.
Where do you see yourself as a part of the LGBTQ community in the future?
I really like to get more into drag. I also feel like there's an underrepresentation of, like, trans men in the drag community. So that's very important for me. I hope that I get to a place where I really fully embrace pride within my identity. And I can be there for other people in the way that, you know, in the ways that I didn't have.
You mentioned that there's, within the drag community, there's an underrepresentation of trans men. Why do you think that is?
I think when we do drag, specifically feminine drag, there's kind of this idea where people who don't even understand our identity are kind of like, you transitioned to be a man, why do you want to present as a woman to tell a story on stage, you know? And they completely miss the whole artistic aspect of it, you know? And all that it entails, you know, and then also that, not only that, but then it's questioning our identity. So it's very vulnerable to put yourself in a place where your identity already doesn't feel stable, you know, like from how people are perceiving you. So then, you know, you struggle with respect, you struggle with being seen. you're just not taken seriously.
What is your hope for the future of the LGBTQ plus community in terms of Lafayette, in terms of SWLA, in terms of Louisiana statewide, and beyond?
I just hope it keeps getting better. I hope that...
Have your attention, please. The library will close in 30 minutes. All public service departments, including the computer step lab, will close in 15 minutes. Please check out any library materials at this time.
I hope that... I hope that there's more education around it, easier access. I hope that there's easier medical aspect, like access, especially for other transgender individuals. I just hope it gets to a point where people aren't having to deal with harassment on the streets, you know? Hope that we have spaces where we can come together and celebrate our identities. And I really love that there was more than just one gay bar. That would be nice too. I just hope we can come together. I hope we can continue to progress. Find places where we feel safe.
This is not included in my list of questions here, but what is it? How do you perceive being interviewed about these types of questions? And this, how do you feel about this whole process?
It's hard in some ways because I find that I really don't have many opportunities to reflect on my identity. I feel like it's just like I'm just going and going and going, you know, just like moving with my life. So I don't feel like there's really a lot of time that I just get to sit and think like, you know, how am I feeling? What is my experience, you know? Because it's like I'm not thinking of it as like this, you know, like this is my experience. I'm just like, it just is, you know? It's just who I am, what I go through. I think it's a wonderful thing. That these interviews are taking place. I think it's really important to have these experiences, not only being told, but them have, like, other people having access to this. Because, you know, for me, at least personally, it might have helped me if I would have had the resource to be able to access other people talking about their experiences. So I think it's very important. It's very emotional, though, at the same time. It brings up a lot of feelings, and I feel like there's still some stuff that I'm not completely comfortable sharing. There's a lot more to it than I could just give in a short interview. Overall, I'm happy that this is happening, and I'm really glad that this is happening. And I think it's an incredible thing that anyone's even taking interest in collecting parts of our history and what we experience.
As a final question to you, especially in the context of what you just shared, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to include?
I want to say, it always gets better, you know? I want to want to say I'm really glad that I didn't give up in periods when it was difficult. I want to say that I'm thankful every day that I can wake up and exist and be myself. I want to say that I have hopes that it will continue to get better.
Well, thank you for agreeing to do this interview. We really appreciate all of your input that you've had.